From there, as I said before, we moved to the van. And from the van, I had an apartment over there, and no more. I said, if you go in business, if it doesn't carry, carry for an apartment, and so we, that's no business, I said. And we had a little apartment. On Third Field in the van was our little apartment. The building is still standing there.
That's where the store was, right?
No, the store was on the north side of the street, on Rockville, on the van in Rockville was the store. And I lived on Fairfield in the van.
Okay.
I lived on Fairfield in the van. And we stayed there 6 months, and we broke both leases. Because I took for a year here and a year there. And we moved back to the south side. And there, south side, that my husband went to work, and we gave up the store. And we moved from there. Where did we move from there? Oh, I had a girlfriend, that Ida, that she was married to a doctor, and she lived on Normandale near Chicago Avenue. She wanted me to be come to live around there. So I got an apartment on Holman and Ohio. Holman Avenue and Ohio, I got an apartment. And I stayed there for a few years. Then Ida died. And I hated the neighborhood. Because I lost there two girlfriends I had there, and I lost them. So I wanted to move away from the neighborhood. So I moved across the street of Sears on Polk Street. No, this was Ohio. Ohio and the... Ohio is running this way. On Ohio Avenue, near Chicago Avenue. Oh, you're in Ohio, I live. Then I moved to Polk and between Polk, between St. Louis and Holman Avenue, in the middle of the block, in the 3600 block. That was across the street of Sears and Roebuck. I moved over there, and I lived there a long time. Faye went to school, she graduated grammar school over there. And she graduated with grammar school, and there where I stopped going to work. That was in the 35, in the 34 or 35 I moved over there. And that was that time when the CIO was organized, when they tried to organize. And I attended a couple of meetings. I was told to come to a meeting through literature, and I was, at that time, the AFFL didn't work so good. We had very bad leadership at that time in the AFFL. And in fact, the Amalgamated had walked out from the AFFL. And when they organized the CIO, they got in the CIO. The Amalgamated and the International Garment Workers. But then the International Garment Workers went out from the CIO and they went back into the AFFL. And we remained with the CIO. So...
Lottie, you first learned about the CIO from the literature and stuff you got while you were in the orchestra, right?
Right.
You used to run to the...
I didn't work at that time yet. Or did I work? Yes, I started working later. I started working. Oh, I went to work in 34 I started looking for a job, but I didn't get to 35 a job, a steady job. In 35 I think I started working for Mendelssohn in 35.
Mendelssohn,
yeah,
and then
in Boston store, yeah, in 35.
I'm curious, like, You had been so strong about the union, and you had worked so hard for it earlier. Were you mad or were you aggravated when you went to them and they couldn't get you a job and you were working in these non-union shops?
Yes, I was. But you see, as I told you before, it isn't what you know, it's whom you know. It was very few jobs to be gotten. And
that was because it was during the Depression.
Yeah. Okay. And there was no jobs. The Amalgamated suffered an awful lot, too. In fact, I told you I went to Spitzer to ask him for a job. And he said, I haven't got it. That was in 34 I went to ask him for a job.
How did you feel that day? Were you mad? Were you...
In 34?
How did you feel that day when you went to Spitzer and he came up?
I wasn't happy about it. But then he said to me, if you would have told me that you wanted anything, I would have taken you into anything, but you didn't say anything, and I had a lot of people on hands, so I couldn't do anything for you. That's what I was told.
Oh, had they forgotten about you after 15 years?
Yeah, there were a lot of new people. Yes, they did forget. There were a lot of new people, said people at that time. A lot of new people. A lot of them died out, a lot of them, the new ones came in. Like during the strike, we had Heine Snyd, that he was one of the organizers, taking care of a lot of the strike. Bessie Abramovich, she was the organizer. Glick, there was one of them, that he was the organizer. Geyer was the organizer. And Kaminsky was the organizer, but Kaminsky was alive. I saw Kaminsky, and he didn't say anything. He couldn't do anything. He was a very easy man going, Kaminsky. But he did contribute an awful lot, Kaminsky, to the organization. Yeah. So I couldn't get in to the Amalgamator. Until, have you got on tape the how I got into the Amalgamator?
How you finally went to see Frank.
Yeah, how I got in to see him. I didn't know that even he was there because he
was... Your cousin.
Yeah, through my cousin. Yeah. Sydney Devine.
So when you were helping to organize the CIO, you weren't even working in the union shop?
No, I wasn't working in the union shop, no. I wasn't. But I realized that we needed a strong union. And the CIO was, we were the organizer, Walter Luther, and many others that I knew at that time. They were the organizers. And I want to tell you something else. It was the left movement, the communists, that they were the originally organized the, participated to organize the CIO. They were the one. But I didn't know all this here. I told you how I got literature. You have them on tape. We got literature, and as long as I was interested in a different, strong, good union. And we heard an awful lot about Walter Luther. We used to, on our recess in the orchestra, we used to, there were a lot of holes, I told you before. So we used to run in to hear Walter Luther, a great man, a big man. And he was talking for us, and many other people were talking for us. And we had a leaflet, and I said to my husband, I want to go to hear what Walter Luther has to say. And she came into the door, they take your name and address, and this is it. And it didn't take very long, but they sent me in a bag of literature to go distribute them. I thought, well, I could do that. That thing I could do for them. Although I'm not in the movement. And I distributed. I wouldn't dare to go there in that neighborhood. Maybe we should have taken... Oh, no, I don't want to be afraid. I would be afraid to go there.
Was Saul active in that at all?
No. In fact, Saul didn't want to get into the union. He said, if I am representing companies, I can't be in the union. I would misrepresent myself, he said.
But he didn't mind your working, leafleting with the CIO?
Oh, no, he did never interfere with me, no.
He never interfered with you? You didn't let him, or he did?
Well, we didn't fight about it, but he was a very clever, very broad-minded man, and not that he liked the administration so well. There was a lot of crookedness going on at that time, too. But he felt I could do my way, and as long as I used to come home at night, as long as I was raised the family, and he had a dinner, and he had everything that he needed. He never interfered with me. In fact, he used to take me from when we lived on 65th and Woodlawn to my orchestra, to rehearsals all the way on the West Side. He used to take me.
Lottie, how did you manage to do all that work help the help with organizing the CIO, take care of your family?
Well, I had a very good system. You have to have a system to everything. When I worked in the morning, I worked. I used to come home, never missed a dinner, and my children never missed anything before I would go home or go to work. I would have lunch for my children on the table, or if they went, my son went to Austin High School, I had for him sandwiches to take along, and he would go to school, and my girl used to go to school about a block away from us, so she found her sandwich and her milk, like this year, and a cup of milk covered up, and her sandwich and a plate covered up with whatever it has, tissue paper, whatever I had. And she would come home for lunch. Sometimes she would eat, sometimes she wouldn't eat. I would find it what I had always. And dinner I made at night. And when my husband came home, he set the table and he had it on the stove warming up. And he always used to come home before me. And I served dinner and he washed the dishes. And I put away the things. And I went to school or to the orchestra if I had to go for practicing, to rehearsals. I used to go once a week if he didn't have no concerts. If he had a concert, we used to go twice and three times a week. And in the where we went to rehearse, where I lived that time on across the street from Sears Roebuck, it was just to walk through Arthur Turner with Grandshaw, Fillmore, and Roosevelt Road. It was about three blocks to walk. So my husband would take me to the rehearsals. He used to take me from all the way from the south side to the rehearsals. Our rehearsals, the hall was on Roosevelt, about 3700 West Roosevelt Road. On corner Avers and Roosevelt Road. They were upstairs, big halls for rehearsals, meetings. See, so, and sometimes I used to stay up till 2 o'clock, like on Thursday. I would come home from work, and then when I started working downtown, I worked late, to 8, 9 o'clock sometimes. I would come home 9 o'clock, and I would bake and cook and clean the house. One night I went to sleep. I used to go to sleep sometimes 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the evening. And after I got through working, one night I remember when my accident happened with my finger, I came home at 9 o'clock and I made chicken, roast chicken and soup chicken, and I baked bread and cookies. And after I was through with that, I cleaned up the kitchen. I even washed the bathroom wall. I even washed. And then when I was through with all that, I went to take a bath. Every time I was through with work, I went to take a bath, because the next day I went to work early in the morning. In the morning I couldn't go take a bath, so I took a bath at night. And I pulled the windows down over the bathtub. It was the window. And then we had ropes on the windows. And the window fell on my finger, see? And this finger was broken, this finger. So they put in this finger was broken. And that night, the whole night, I couldn't sleep that night. But I had to get up to work. And I went to work, and it was on a Friday. This happened Thursday. And Friday I went to work, and I was full of pain. The finger hurt me so much, it was terrible. And I had a bandage on it, and I kept on pulling in it. But I worked. And we had a nurse in the store. And I went to the nurse, she gave me an aspirin or something. And she said to me, you better go to a doctor. So when I came home, I had a friend, a doctor, a dentist, and next door to him was a doctor, a medical doctor. And I called up, he was a good friend, the whole family were friends of mine. And his aunt and his sister played by us in the orchestra. I'll show you sometime the picture, I've got their picture on it. And I said to him, and his name was Harry, I think. I don't remember already. And I said, Harry, I said, could you recommend me a good doctor? I am full of pain. I don't know. I hurt a finger last night. And he said, come running over here. I want to take a look at it. And he and I was full of pain. And he said, yes, next door we have a doctor. He took me into the next door doctor. And he said, go to the hospital right away. And he called out the hospital. They took me in the hospital. I think I was in the Bethany Hospital. It was a little hospital around there where I used to live. And he said, your finger is broken. And he put took me to the hospital and he gave me a needle in there and he straightened out the finger. And the next morning, this was on a Friday, and I stayed in the hospital Sunday and Monday I went out of the hospital and went back to work. So I had in a splint it was. And I kept on going like this to straighten it out. That's why my fingers crooked. But I asked what I could do to straighten it out. So the doctor told me, well, in my age, that was a couple of years ago, he said, in my age, they would have to break the finger, and in my age, it wouldn't heal so well. So better let it go. So I let it go.
A year after you worked at these other places, the union called you, and you went to Bonds in Oak Park, right? Were you doing there?
Huh?
What exactly were you doing there?
I was doing bottom selling, handwork, and then on the machine. But I told you how it happened. They fired me in the Boston store.
Yeah.
Do you have this recorded too?
Yeah.
They fired me in the Boston store, so I went back to Mendel's, and they took me back. Because there I quit Mendel's. So I worked there in Mendel's. You have this here too. When I got home, my daughter told me that Mr. Margolis called me and said that I should go Monday morning to Barnes in Oak Park. And I went to work over there in Oak Park. So on Saturday morning, I got a special delivery. Okay, from the union, I should go in Oak Park to work. Well, there in Oak Park too, I started working there. It was a nice little shop. But this girl that I took her place, she had married a very young fella. She was twice as old as the fella was, and they moved to Milwaukee, I think, and they opened a candy store, and I took her job. And she was very friendly with the foreman. And the foreman wanted her back. So every time he used to tell me, every time when I used to get my pay, he used to say, you know, Lottie, you only extra girl here. You know, Lottie, you only extra girl. That's the way he used to tell me all the time. Well, I took it for granted for a long, long time. But one day, I just couldn't take it anymore. And I went to the union, which I wasn't very much a complainer. I took it very easy. And I went to the union, and we had that time a business agent, very nice fellow, McGillicutt. And he was a very smart fellow, a good fellow. And I told McGillicutt about it. I said, Brother McGillicutt, is that the way to say all the time? Whenever I get my pay, that I'm only an extra girl? I was told that I was going to be a steady girl. And he said, never mind, don't think of it, you're a steady girl here. Because he thought that I was a friend of somebody's from the organization. And so, I didn't know what he meant with it. And because it was Rosenblum told him to give me a job. He told Margolis, and Margolis told he was servicing the shops. He said, you take care of Lottie because this one and this one send her in over there. And he did. He was very nice to me. So one day something else had happened to me at that time.
He didn't let you work full time,
right? He didn't let me work that time, but this was something else. I was shortened 10 cents of my pay, but I didn't want to make a commotion about it. I just let it go. But we had a Swedish girl, a very nice girl. I was good friends with her, Marie. And this Swedish girl, timekeeper came in running from the office. Marie, I owe you a penny. So she said, for what? And she said, I gave you a penny less in the paycheck. So she said, oh, forget about it. She said, no, here's a penny. So I thought to myself, I was short in 10 cents. Why shouldn't I say anything? So I said, you know, you owe me 10 cents. I was short in 10 cents. So she said, oh, you always make trouble. Like this here. So I started crying. I was a crybaby, you know.
Did you have trouble like that from anybody?
No. Nobody ever told me that. So I came running to McGilligan and I told him the story. And you know that McGilligan on the next day, he came running to the shop. First he spoke to the manager of the shop, Mr. Elliot was the manager. And Mr. Elliot and the timekeeper came in and excused himself why it had happened. Oh, it was like that. When she came in and yelled at me, you always make trouble. So I was crying, and the steward came up to me and he said, what's the matter, Lottie? And I told him the story. And he was the one to tell McGilligan. And McGilligan came out on the next day. And the manager came in and he excused himself. And the front of McGilligan, and the front of the manager, the timekeeper came in and she excused herself. I'm sorry, Lottie, why I did it. I shall never do this again. And I apologize. Please forgive me. And this was in the front of the shop of everybody. She excused herself. And then they were nice to me. And then we had another foreman. After this one left, so we left, we got in Frank. Well, Frank was the one that he used to send me home and have the other people work. He took in a man from, he was Bohemian, and he took in an old man, a rabbit. He was also Bohemian, an old man, a real old man, but he was a good tailor. And he used to send me home and leave Redick worked, the old man, and the other people. So one day, this Mary, the one that I mentioned before, she stood up and she said, why do you send Lottie home and have this man work? So he said, because I haven't got for Lottie any work. So she said, Lottie could do the same work that the old man does. If me working, let Lottie work too. And if Lottie's not going to work, me not going to work too. So he said, well, if you want that way, so I'll do that way, just like that with his hand. And he let me work now, too. Because night was time and a half he used to get.
But you eventually left there, right?
I left there because I couldn't make enough. The kids started to go to school already in Champaign. They were in Champaign, and my son was at that time in he was in the Marines, I think he was. He enlisted in the Marines when he was about 16 or 17 years old. So when he came back, he went back to school.
And Saul didn't contribute for their education at all, right?
Not to her. He didn't want her to go to college. He wanted her to go to work. I don't know. He said the girls would get married and wash diapers. So I contributed everything of my money that I used to make. I used to make $25 a week. But then later, that same man that I worked for that didn't want me to work overtime, I saw that I can't make enough money over here. So I wanted to, I thought that I could am worth more than that. I could make more. If this was better already at that time in the tailoring. So Mr. Loftus, he was an Irishman, a very nice fellow, a big man. And he came in once a, we had 7 or 8 stores, so once a month, once a week he used to go in different stores. and he came in to our store. At that time, Mary had left our store. She went to work for Sobey. Sobey went away from us to work downtown, and he took her along that was also, so he took her along to him. And I said before, you have to be good to everybody, otherwise, Mr. Loftus used to come in, he used to stay like this here in the door, and like this with his hand in pockets, and look around the shop. And he saw me run from one machine to the other, and go to finishing, and going loose, and going on skirt, going on pants, and going on everything, because I knew everything of what to do in a shop. And he thought that he was a good girl, that I was a good girl. And when I came up to him, I said, Mr. Loftus, I'm leaving next week. He said, oh no, you can't leave. Because I said, why? I need money. I have children in school. And at that time, we had a bank already in the school. Did I tell you about the bank?
Yeah.
I said, I have children in college, I said, and I have to have money to pay for them. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to have them in school.
Where did you think you'd go that you'd make more money?
In a shop or somewhere. I would make more money because girls that knew a lot of things to do, they did make more money. So he said, I need a girl like you downtown, which at that time, a girl that quit over there in the store. And my work that I was doing everything, but especially operating on skirts and coats, they had a man doing it. And a man was getting twice as much, a man was getting 30 to 50, I think. $32.50, and I was getting $25. For the same thing that I was doing. So they would better, for them it paid to have a girl to work to do that, and they would save money. So they took me downtown to work. And the store was on the,
That's why they took you downtown, because you'd work cheap, they could get you to work cheaper.
That's right. And don't think that I wanted to work cheaper. I kept on running to the union and tell them I'm doing the work that the man does. Why can't I get the same money as a man? But there was nothing that I could have done about it.
What did they tell you?
Well, the union that time told me that maybe it wasn't right, it isn't right for me to tell you. The union was, well, he's a man, and this is a woman's pay. This is a woman's pay. There were a lot of women like I, and did men's work, and they got the union, girl's pay. There was a lot of girls at that time like that. I wasn't the only one. I always thought operators, seamers, operators, used to make $75, $50, and the women made less than that. There was a lot of things like that. I don't know whether the union wasn't strong enough to fight for it or so, I don't know. Or they wanted to get a loan with the companies, this I can't tell you. So when I got in over there, then I got in trouble again. The girls were jealous of me, because the girls didn't do that kind of work. Only I did. I was the only girl.
Couldn't do all the different kinds of operations?
Yeah, they couldn't do all the different kind of operations.
Oh, the job you had was usually a man's job, but you knew how to do it, so you got it, and they were jealous.
Well, I would do everything, see? I would do make sleeves, and I was finishing, and I was to work on skirts. And I would take in sights, which this year was a man's work.
So they were jealous because you were doing men's jobs.
Yeah.
But so you weren't making any more than
I wasn't making more. So you know what? Once a girl came along and came up to me, he said, Lottie, you better sit on your... Should I say, sit on your ass. I shouldn't run around the shop. I should sit on my ass and do the work with the finishing like they do. That's what I was told. And not only that, they went to the, I was only transferred. This was not a new job downtown. I was only transferred. And the union was that I was transferred. Not that I, to get my vacation in time, to be entitled like everybody else for everything. So they went to the steward and to complain. How come that Lottie's doing this here? Lottie's doing that, like, we don't need her, it's slow now, we don't need her here. So the steward said, he went to the union to find out. Also, they gave a complaint. He has to go to the union and tell the complaint. So he was told in the union that I'm not a new girl. I was only transferred from one store. It was one company. Then I got vacation. The first year that I got vacation over there. Although I got a little vacation over there, too. I told you that I got vacation there, too. When it came to the vacation, when I worked here in Oak Park. So everybody got vacation. Well, I knew I worked there. I got the job in November. And in May, in November, I got the job. And in May, was vacation. They were taken in May. They were taken the names of the people that they were getting.